WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Neil Basundath grew up in a Hindu family on the island of Trinidad. College was his ticket out. He went to school in Toronto and became a Canadian citizen. His first novel, A Casual Brutality, is set on an imaginary Caribbean island he calls Casacamata. The main character returns to the island from Canada where he was educated. He watches his island country turn into a police state. Basundath writes, "After the island received its independence, there we were then, free to make our decisions, free to make our mistakes, free to take the path that led eventually to nocturnal patrols of policemen clutching rifles." I asked him if the situation he describes in this novel is similar to what he witnessed in Trinidad.
Yes, it is. In one generation, Trinidad has gone from being an island where the policemen were basically tropical bobbies armed only with nightsticks to submachine gun-toting paramilitary policemen. It's a depressing change in so quick a time, and it comes directly from independence, which let me clarify what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that British colonialism was better than independence. What I am saying is that independence itself has gone wrong, and it's time that we started taking a look at what we have done to the concept and what we've done to ourselves.
Well, you describe the government and the military as being comprised of petty people wanting power, not reform.
Well, that's exactly it. One thing that the British failed to teach, I think, many of their former colonies was the idea of public service, the idea of building a country. What they did transmit was the idea of enriching oneself, of political power, as a means of filling one's own personal coffers. And that's, I think, a great tragedy.
The uncle of the main character in your novel refers sarcastically to people who change countries like they change clothes. When it gets too dirty, they leave.
Yes.
Have you heard that said?
Well, I've thought of it. This is how I've thought of it, actually. I know a lot of people living not only in the West Indies, but in various parts of the world, who say would do anything to move to Canada or to the United States. But what they would do is wait until the very last moment, because living in some of these countries, they are busy enriching themselves, and they do not like the idea of having to leave without making an extra $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. So they will stay as long as they possibly could. When the island gets too dirty for them and it becomes too dangerous, then they will leave, go to another country. Unfortunately, more often than not, taking the very same attitudes with them. I've also thought of it in a way as using a safe country such as Canada or the United States as one would use a public urinal. I've known too many people who have gone to Canada, acquired citizenship, and then returned to their home islands. This was the plan in the first place. It was simply a way of getting a Canadian passport so that they could afford to return to their home islands, enrich themselves, and when things got too hot, they had a foreign passport to take them away.
The opening of your book is set at the airport, and the main character is leaving the island to Canada, where he holds citizenship.
Yes.
And I'd like you to read an excerpt of that airport scene.
Certainly. Raj has, the main character, is just checking in at the airline counter. No luggage, no clothes, no books, no medical bag, not even a toothbrush. Just my passport, a one-way ticket, and in a canvas money belt strapped around my middle, U.S. bills and traveler's checks, and my Canadian citizenship and social insurance cards. The paper and plastic that, in our little island of Casacamata, are in themselves a definition of freedom. I reach for my papers on the counter. Is that all? I say. The young man nods, sucks his teeth, folds his arms high on his chest, hunching his shoulders into a bony fragility. He looks away with feigned indifference towards a middle-aged couple now emerging from the shadowed world into the light, each laboring with two bulging suitcases, belted and marked for identification at the handles by swatches of red ribbon. They walk with studied slowness, yet give the impression of bustle, of people who want to run and manage to restrain themselves as they must, but only with transparent effort.
Why did you leave Trinidad?
I grew up dissatisfied with Trinidad. I found it always very small. I came from a family that traveled a great deal. My aunts and uncles and parents were always going off to Europe or North America. So I was aware of a bigger, more attractive world out there. And I found myself hemmed in. I found myself different. I was the only one in my circle of my age who enjoyed reading, and that set me apart. So that I grew up with dissatisfaction and looking forward to leaving. And when I left at the age of 18, I never looked back.
Your uncle is the writer V.S. Naipaul, who also grew up in Trinidad in a Hindu family and has lived in London since he went to college there. Was he ever seen as a traitor by the family for leaving and not coming back?
No, not at all. Not by the family. We understood that. The idea of being a writer was not one that you could exercise in Trinidad. It was simply too small and too isolated. Certainly, coming from a place like that, you would run out of material to eventually. If you were to be a writer with this kind of background, you had to travel as he has. You had to find other subjects, other interests, other obsessions, I suppose. So no, in fact, the family is very supportive, very proud of his achievements. And that, I suppose, has helped smooth the way for me to become a writer, too.
In your novel, A Casual Brutality, the main character leaves the imaginary island of Kesikamata and goes to Canada, to Toronto, where he goes to school. And there, in college, he develops a wariness of racial camaraderie. You write, "It was visible minorities who most made me feel a member of a visible minority. Visible minorities who seemed most to draw the lines of difference."
Yes.
Is that something you experienced yourself?
Yes, it is. Toronto is aptly described as a multicultural city. You find there members of every race and every culture you possibly care to name. Something that I became wary of was walking along the street and having someone, a non-white, look at me and smile or nod or wink simply because I happen to also have brown skin. I resent that because it seems to me to be the racism of inclusion rather than the racism of exclusion. But it remains a kind of racism anyway. I don't see any particular reason to acknowledge someone's presence because of the color of their skin. I would more easily do it if I knew that we had a common interest in, say, writing or politics. But I've always been very wary of that because it seems to me just to be the other side of the coin.
Were you seen as a snob for distrusting this racial camaraderie?
Yes, I was, but that didn't bother me. There are some things to be said for snobbishness.
Did your parents believe in the caste system, and if so, how did that affect you, do you think?
No, my parents didn't believe in it on a daily basis. My grandparents' generation was more aware of it. But that was simply, as I saw it, part of the differences that they were drawing. While they were saying unpleasant things about blacks or people of mixed race, they were also busy dividing Indians into the various castes. And this was stunning to me. But they, of course, it was so second nature to them.
What caste had your family been in?
Well, I'm told that we're Brahmins, which means that we're supposedly learned men. But I'd like someone to define the word learned for me.
What do you mean? You sound like you don't really believe that they were Brahmins.
Well, no, I'm not disputing the fact that they were Brahmins. But a lot of the Brahmins and Brahmins learned in the ways of Hinduism that I've met have not impressed me intellectually. Mm-hmm. So that I see no particular pride in being of a caste that has, in my experience at any rate, has proven itself to be rather vacuous.
Does it strike you as a little ironic that the place that you brought up and which you felt was very claustrophobic while you were there has ended up giving you very dramatic stories to write about?
I suppose it is ironic in a way, but we always write out of our obsessions, whatever they may be. I don't regret at all having grown up in Trinidad. I don't pretend that it never happened, but it is behind me. And I'm glad that it's there, it's useful material.
One last question. I want you to explain the casualness in the title of your book, A Casual Brutality.
It's one of my obsessions. It's something that frightens me, the way that violence or brutality can simply descend on one out of nowhere. This happens in North America. You can be walking along the street and suddenly be mugged. You have nothing to do with the mugger. You just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's terrifying. But also in third world countries, in a place like Kesikamata that I've described, the violence becomes almost institutionalized. It becomes part of the police way of doing things, the government way of doing things. But it is not planned with a computer. It can strike in fairly random ways. And that makes it very casual, very daily. It simply becomes part of life. People accept that. And that to me is terrifying.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.